Deliveroo presents Decision Time. With free delivery in your area, the dilemma of what to order tonight just got even more delicious. Choose from the best around, including Boojum and Burger King. We know you want everything. But what's it going to be this time? Make your decision in the app and get free delivery today. Deliveroo. Food. We get it.
Available within specific areas from all partners, excluding McDonald's. Minimum order €15. Ends 18th of June 23. Fees, T's and C's and geographical restrictions apply. See deliveroo.ie/terms for details.
I do not see how a situation where Raj is going to be managing Ireland before Paulie.
Paul's next.
Yeah, in my eyes, what's coming down the line, I would suggest that Raj might have to hold on.
Subscribe to the Rugby Stream on the OTB Sports app now.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Sky. All the football you love in one place. Across Sky Sports, BT Sport and Premier Sports.
And you're welcome back to Off the Ball Saturday on News Talk. John Duggan with you through to five. This is Football Saturday all the way until then. Remember, Football and Off the Ball brought to you by Sky. Don't miss the final round of the Premier League on Super Sunday live only on Sky Sports. You can text us 53106. Tweet us at Off the Ball. You can listen across the country on your radio and News Talk. Hope you're enjoying the sun. And also watch us in the Off the Ball digital and social channels for Twitter at Off the Ball, YouTube and on Facebook. We'll also podcast the show on the Off the Ball section of the Go Loud Network. It's also available wherever you get your pods. If you ever miss the live broadcast, check it out. We have a lot of people who listen in on the pod section as well, so we really appreciate that. We're joined in studio by Dan McDonald of the Irish Independent and the broadcaster and journalist Johnny Ward. How are you both?
Good. Yeah, good.
And on the line by David Connolly, the former Republic of Ireland striker. David, how are you?
Good afternoon. Yeah, I hope you're well, everyone. Yeah.
Yeah, big one for you today. We'll talk about it a bit. Luton Town versus Coventry in the Championship playoff. In terms of, I know you've seen a lot of Luton this season, David, but we're going to start with a bit of a serious story, I suppose, and discuss it at the beginning, because it was disgusting chanting aimed at the Shamrock Rovers manager Stephen Bradley abusing his son by a small group of people outside of Turner's Cross after the League of Ireland game between Cork City and Shamrock Rovers last night, as Stephen's son Josh has been suffering from leukemia. So Cork City have issued a statement. Cork City FC wish to unreservedly condemn the actions of a handful of individuals who directed disgusting abuse of Shamrock Rovers manager Stephen Bradley from outside the stadium shortly after tonight's match. The club will work with all relevant authorities to identify those involved and take the appropriate action against those involved. On behalf of the club, we wish to apologise to Mr. Bradley for the actions of these individuals. And Stephen has, you know, obviously said he was disgusted by what happened, Dan. It's just so nasty. It's terrible, really, that we even have to kind of like address this at the top of a football show, you know?
Yeah, like it's sort of unimaginable, really. Because I was at Pat's Dundalk last night, and you know, the statement came through from Cork really quickly. Like, you know, really, it's sort of, when you know the way, like with these things, sometimes there's an uproar and it takes a bit of time for it to filter out. But the fact that Cork got the statement out so quickly, and I sort of actually nearly applaud them away for doing that. You know, they were
Shamrock Rovers have thanked them as well today.
They were so ahead of it. You know, rather than, you know, it was clearly very clear cut, and Stephen Bradley's comments were very strong and obviously laced with sort of emotion very naturally, because I think everyone in Irish football has been, I don't know if it's caught up is maybe the wrong word, but you know, a sort of can really has really been struck by the story of Josh. You know, he lifted the trophy last year, and you know, in a weird way, you know, we're used to, like, in football, this can happen. Okay, this can happen around football. It's people, you know, make chants about, you know, personal things related to people. But actually, this didn't happen at all with the Josh thing last year, you know, all throughout the season. And I sort of felt it was almost like, you know, there's a line that you don't cross there. And, you know, some fierce rivals of Rovers, you know, and yet, like, everyone handled it really well, you know. And like, so it's a little bit shocking that, you know, well, I don't know, like sort of 8-9 months later, these sort of morons just pick their moment. Now, I see this morning there's a follow-up statement that these people weren't technically in the ground. There's a sort of a pub that overlooks a corner of the ground, and I think that pub, as the corner flag has, seems to, reading the reports today and our own website and other places, they seem to feel like they've identified the culprits. I'm guessing, you know, being a premises, you know, you'd have some kind of CCTV or some kind of, you know, you'd know, I suppose, what customers are there, and other people there must know. Like other people there must know. And that's what I would have been thinking if we weren't sure at this stage who was responsible for it, you'd be calling out to people to call that out. But it would appear that they seem to be confident enough, and I mean, all we can do is condemn it. You know, all we can do is condemn it. Like it's you're just dealing with the, someone, you know, said to me, it's just the lowest of the low.
It is, yeah. It's really nasty stuff. And it's one of the biggest issues in society, I feel, at the moment, like ugly behaviour, nastiness. And I think as a country, we all need to call it out. Dermot Usher, the owner of Cork, was going on social media today. He was too annoyed to comment last night. There are people, these people are not Cork City fans. This type of behaviour is no place in society. This is not a true reflection of what Cork City FC and the people are. Lifetime bans be handed out to anyone connected with this. As you say, it's a line you just don't cross.
No, like it's, I mean, you know, like you just, I can't comprehend the range of the emotions that the Bradley family have gone through in the last year, and it's something he's spoken about consistently. And I would say, and I don't know, I haven't spoken to Stephen Bradley about this, but like, I would say this is just almost unexpected, you know, just in you know, I'm not saying you ever expect this, but like you think when the news happens or someone will just cross that line then, but it's so long down the road, and I you know, you're trying to move on, and yeah, like, you know, Josh is obviously old enough to, you know, like he's been, like the football community in Ireland has sort of wrapped their arms around him, you know, and as I said, like lifted the trophy, was at a couple of the awards dinners last year. It's been fantastic. And you don't want that to be sort of sullied as well by like the actions of a couple of idiots as well, you know, and that's the thing, like you're always uncomfortable that there is also like, you know, a sort of a person behind the headlines too. And naturally, like the receiver Bradley spoke about it, right? So he was, you know, obviously wanted this to be raised and wanted this to be put out there, and that's the natural reaction. But like, you know, and you have to discuss it, but you also have to think, oh, you know, this is not just not what anyone needs, you know. No. Like for this to sort of to spin out to become a thing. But you just have to hope that like whatever way this pans out from here, that the authorities find the people responsible and yeah, do what they can. Yeah, you know, I said, like, it's, you know, we're used to, you talk about society now, like a lot of this is like the stuff that people will say online is like off the charts, you know, and yeah, have like, and that's maybe why we're even just more shocked that it's something that happened in your face. It's like the type of cowardly thing, and it's cowardly anyway, but it's the type of thing that you were used to, like, you know, the people anonymously just saying things which are ridiculous. So this type of thing, you know, after a match to someone's face, I just can't get my head around it actually when it came through as a story, you know. And like it had been, you know, like Cork had won the game, you know, like it had been a sort of a, like a, I suppose a great night of football in a weird way, like not for Shamrock Rovers, maybe the three players sent off, it was a crazy night, but you know, Cork City have had a big win, you know, I think over whatever, like four a bit thousand people there, all going home happy. That was the mood actually from chatting to a couple of people, you know, sort of affiliated to Cork. It was like they're naturally buzzing, they've beaten Rovers, you know, what is the mindset that like drives you to that place?
An ignorant mindset.
Yeah, like not that it's justifiable in any context, but you know, sometimes people lash out when they're sort of disappointed, you know, or like when they've been enraged or antagonized in some way. And that's not excusing this in any way. I'm not trying to misrepresent that. But the fact that like this is something that would come to your mind to do, your team has won. You're just dealing with like,
yeah,
dealing with the worst of the worst.
Yeah, 53106 is our text number. We got a text in from Jared in Cork. Cork City fan here, disgusted by what happened. Yeah, so that's what happened last night, and obviously we'll talk about football now. Johnny, it's good to see the under-17s in a European quarter-final against Spain. Whatever happens, I think it's been a successful tournament already, hasn't it?
Oh yeah, like, and just on that very briefly, JD, my thoughts are with Josh and his family, because it'd be very hard for them not to be made aware of this. And Josh's battle, like what he's going through, for a kid to go through that, I've no words. It's sad. I think just to kind of extrapolate a bit on what Dan is saying there, it's sad that we'll probably spend more time talking about these idiots than by today's show than the amount of people who rallied around the Bradley family, because that's what, you know, I got a lift home from Lee Stacey, from the Cove goalkeeper, from a game recently, and he was telling me that he's growing his hair long, and he wants to get his hair so long that you can use it down the line. Somebody can use it as a kind of a hair replacement that has cancer. And he said one of the reasons that he was so, he had a family bereavement, but also is the Josh Bradley thing really struck with him. And I think if Stephen Bradley were on the show today, he would really attest to the love that he's gotten from across the community in the League of Ireland. I presume these people were drinking, possibly on drugs. I don't know how anyone in their right mind...
We don't know that.
Well, I bloody well hope they were, because I don't know how anyone in their right mind could think, could even, this could come into their head. And I've some sympathy for Cork City as well, because that could be any club, really. You know, you can't legislate for this sort of nonsense. And I'm, in one respect, the fact that this was brought up, because you get a lot of unsavoury chants, and I was a bit worried coming out of COVID that, if you remember, there was some unsavoury incidents happening in football grounds in Britain where I think people had been kind of locked up for so long that they were basically losing themselves a bit in grounds, and there were, you know, a lot of kind of anecdotes about people doing stuff that they shouldn't at football grounds. There was a bit of kind of tension there, and didn't really creep into the League of Ireland, and it's been a brilliant season, so I hope it's not kind of sullied by this. But yeah, my thoughts are just with Stephen and the family. On the under-17s, which is great to talk about, it's just fantastic, JD. You know, the style of play, the fact that they were, funny enough, to bring in Stephen Bradley, it was after they lost the first game to Poland. He said, like, let's not overreact to one result here. And let's, he would have said the same thing after the last two games, let's not overreact to a tournament because we have wider issues at play here. But Colin O'Brien, who's an ex-Cork City legend as well, he's done a great job. And I think there's been real stability in the underage kind of management teams in Ireland for some time now, and it was kind of, Dan had no more than me, but I don't think it was taken that seriously for a long time, particularly the under-21s, whereas now, like, there seems to be a proper kind of togetherness among them. And he spoke about knowledge being power afterwards in terms of the coaching credentials of the people in Ireland and the standard of football. You know, and the two lads from Pats with the two goals, Kerr and Melia, you know, how proud for their families, but how proud for Pats as well. And, you know, to, we're looking forward now to watching Ireland and Spain under-17s at 7 o'clock and thinking that Ireland be well up to these lads technically in many areas. And Dan wrote a piece about, you know, that we're light years away from the likes of Spain and the likes of other countries in terms of our structures and all that. But I think it's another thing that will lead to government, kind of the need for us to get this right, because we, by the proxy of Brexit, we kind of have to look after these kids in this country.
Yeah, most of these players are
all but 18 out of 20 play at home here.
Crystal Palace player, I think.
Yeah, there's two, the two guys who aren't are not born in the country, you know, there's sort of eligibility rules, so the other 18 are. And yeah, there's one, I mean, I think, you know, Matthew Murr from Cork is joining Hoffenheim in the summer,
even,
know,
like
a few of them are, a few of them will go the European route. But generally, generally these players are reliant on structures here to continue their development now between the ages of like 16, 17, 18. And some of them are on the Shamrock Rovers transition year course, you know, the full-time course in Roadstone, which is good. It's the best we probably have. But it's still, like, it's still not, you know, it's not at the standard you would get if you went to Brighton or something like that. And we have to be honest about that. But yeah, there's a real onus on football to look after these players now and give them the best chance, and not just them, but also the players in their generation and the ones around them, because it's not just about, say, you know, 20 players in a generation. There could be 200 in that generation, you know, knocking around it. And you know, what do we have for them? Because naturally, you know, some will peak early, some will develop later, and there's a lot wrong with our structures here. That even, yes, it's true that, like, the outstanding players will go into League of Ireland first team setups and train with men, and like some of them, Mason Media, you know, already played for Pats before he went out here, and he's meant to be an exceptional talent. But clearly there'll be, you know, you think of players like Seamus Coleman, think of players like Kevin Doyle. Seamus Coleman didn't play for Ireland at under-21 level. So there's a lot sort of going on, and we have to make sure that we provide the best environment for these players.
David Connolly, England won this a few years ago, the under-17s, and you see players like, I remember Tony Kroos, I think, played in this tournament. I think Fernando Torres and I think Phil Foden was involved in a lot of these underage teams. So these tournaments matter, you know, they matter for the future, and it's great to see us doing well at a European championship.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've been following it online, I guess, like a lot of people. you know, I also know, like, Marie Crow, who I often do stuff with on radio, you know, her lad came over, I think, with Shamrock Rovers under 14s, and they won a tournament at Arsenal, you know. So it's you know, it's obviously everything's heading in the right direction, which is really good news. And look, it's going to be a difficult game because Spain, as we all know, you know, whatever, 50-odd million people, they've got that in their favour. The talent pool is obviously a lot bigger, but in a one-off game, who knows? You know, but it's been great to follow, really pleasing. And you know, I guess the spot at a World Cup is the real kind of cherry on top, really. I think that would be something else.
Yeah, it's funny. Say on that, like, I'm just thinking, like, there's a lot of talk about Mason Melia. So I was doing a piece on Mason Melia this week, and I spoke to his uncle, Clive Clark, who I think David would have been at Sunderland.
Yeah.
And yeah. Clive Clark, people remember, had the near-death experience. You know, he collapsed at halftime in the dressing room while playing for Leicester against Nottingham Forest in a cup match, and he was at Sunderland. That was when Roy Keane had that sort of, I'm surprised he had a heart line. You know, this was Roy Keane and his dark sort of quotes in a, you know, press conferences era. But I spoke to Clive Clark. I knew Mason Melia was his nephew, but I hadn't pieced it together that Clive Clark's sister was heavily pregnant with Mason at the time that all this happened. So, like, you have this situation where Clive Clark's career was ended by his cardiac arrest in the dressing room, and at the time, you can imagine for his family and all the stress, and his sister is like 8 months pregnant. You hear your brother has nearly died, and then a couple of weeks later, Mason Melia is born on the 22nd of September.
There's something almost in the stars about
this. There is something, man. Like, Clive spoke about it. He was like, it's almost like a weird kind of fate that, like, as his football chapter ended, you know, and then Mason has come along. And but that wasn't really the point I was trying to get at. Like, you know, Mason Melia is
he's a year young,
but he's the youngest ever player to play for St Patrick's Athletic, which is obviously an achievement. But the Spain team tonight has Lamine Yamal, the youngest ever player to play for Barcelona, who at the age of 15 played for Barcelona last month. So, I mean, Mason Melia, huge achievement to play for Pats at that age. But you're up against Spain, who have a 15-year-old playing for Barcelona, and that actually is part of a probably reflective of trend in football generally, that clubs are trying players younger for whatever reason. Like, you see, I mean, people remember Wayne Rooney coming along at 16, but a lot of these records now for, like, youngest players are being challenged. And like, the Ireland have a very young squad at this tournament, but Spain, for all the 50 million population or whatever they have, the incredible budgets, they're still chucking in a 15-year-old too who's able to play for Barcelona now. So that shows what you're competing against.
And you have different...
I mean, like, just... I was just going to say, just on that, the reason why I think it doesn't matter, whatever happens today will be, but I think Spain is a great... I think, as Colin's talked about, you know, in terms of... If you look at how Spain have gone about their youth... their talent pool of youth and how they use them is like the example to the world. So a lot of their lads, when they were, you know, say 2008, 2010, 2012, those younger age lads who were coming through, who then played for the 21s, played in the senior side, came back to the 21s, won everything with the 21s, then stepped back up to the senior side. Now, with Ireland, obviously, that, I don't know whether that would necessarily happen, but like, it's a kind of cultural thing, because, you know, just because you've now progressed past that 21. So my point being, I think Spain treat the younger age groups with the utmost respect to get the most out of those players, and then they then use them to come back and enhance those age groups, even if they are beyond that. You know, De Gea came back down. Juan Mata came back down to the tournament. And they went and won tournaments. And culturally, you want these lads to not think, right, I want to jump to the senior squad and then I've left them behind, or the 21s behind. Because you want it to be an inbuilt kind of culture that you want to go and win things, and you want to drop back. You want to help those younger age groups if you can still play for them. Because traditionally, Ireland, like, you know, you mentioned Seamus Coleman might not play younger age groups, 21s. It was lads like myself, didn't play younger age groups, went straight to the senior squad, you know, and bypassing that because the needs was the senior side, right? The need was the senior side. But I think it'd be really good if some of these lads do go on and progress and they go to the seniors, and we've had this before with other players, you know, but they do, let's take some things from countries like Spain and still use them lower down. Like in a few years' time, they're probably, look, these lads, you can't get ahead of yourself. These lads, some of these lads might not play for Ireland 21s. They might not play for Ireland senior squad. We don't know what their careers may be. So let them enjoy this. But if they do progress, then let's take something from how Spain does things. And, you know, and not just think, right, with the seniors now, let's not use them. I know, Stephen, that we've had a lot of that with Stephen as well as 21 manager and as senior manager as well. But I think that's important.
Just to maybe talk to us maybe about some of the players from a multicultural background that we haven't seen in this under 17.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing.
Only Akachuku is a baller.
Like, yeah, well, this is it. The whole, the profile of the team does reflect the New Ireland. I mean, you've got Nadj Razi, who's the playmaker, the number 10. Aika Orazi, also Shamrock Rovers. He's one of the 15-year-olds like me at the left side. As you mentioned, yeah, in other positions as well. The Nixon Okason, even from Bowes, who's the backup for Mason Melia. Yeah, you look at the profile of our team now, and it does reflect the changing profile of Ireland. This point has been made. I mean, you do have we have some fine patriots marching the streets, you know, talking about their views on, you know, Ireland being full and all this rubbish, really. And, you know, you see one of football's great strengths, you know, as a sport, being the global sport, it's a sort of a universal language, you know, and we do have across our underage teams, you know, we have players from all sorts of background. I mean, we see it at the senior level as well too, we have a sort of a heavy Nigerian influence,
but Chidoze Igbeni was at Turner's Cross,
yeah, we have, you know, but drop down, and we have sort of Eastern European origin as well, Albanian, you know, Kevin Zeffi, who's at Inter Milan, and, you know, Justin Ferrazzi, Shamrock Rovers, and this is it. Yeah, it's a completely change in profile, and I'm not saying this is strictly related, because you're going into sweeping generalisations.
Yeah, you are
but,
yeah.
Well, you don't know what I'm going to say,
I'm going to read your mind for many years.
I'm now tempted to say something completely different just to throw you.
Say just, the exact opposite of what you're going to say.
No, but just speaking to people about this, speaking to people this week in underage football, they would say that we actually we're producing a different type of player. That we now have a lot of attacking talent. Mm. We don't at the moment, in fact, a couple of the players, sort of the eligibility rules, are defenders. That maybe in some of the underage age groups there's a shortage of outstanding sort of centre halves, the old school type of Irish centre half we would speak of. Now, in fairness, at senior level we do have Collins, Omobo Badele, Dara O'Shea, who are going to be around for a long time, you know, and there's others as well. From watching the 17s this week, their attacking play is incredible. They've scored in the first 5 to 10 minutes of every game, I think. And actually there's attack and talent there. One of the most exciting players of all has missed the tournament, who's Trent Coney-Doherty, who's at Liverpool, came from Derry City. The reason he's at Liverpool is because basically the side of the border he grew up on, he was able to move at 16, unlike the others. But he's a very exciting talent, you know. So you're talking about a couple of wingers, a striker, you know, a playmaker, and there's actually a real heavy sort of top heavy element of attack and talent, which is great.
And I think as well, Dan, I think the success of this team is a success for every sort of everyone who's worked across this level in Ireland with the underage teams and in the League of Ireland and so on, to often in difficult circumstances, you know, mainly volunteers to try and get them to play a style of football. And if you watch underage in League of Ireland now, anecdotally, if your team isn't playing sort of out from the back, it's kind of frowned upon, and it has become a thing. And just to mention the clubs that are represented: Pats, Shamrock Rovers, Bowes, Pats, Cork City, Pats, Shamrock Rovers, Waterford, Bowes, Shamrock Rovers, Wexford, Shamrock Rovers, UCD, Bowes, Waterford. And I did speak to Graham Gartland after the last time he was on here, and one of the challenges here, and it's kind of sort of what David is saying there, that Pats will change. And when they had Shamrock Rovers players that were going to the under 15 Ireland team, there were necessarily quite a large minority of Shamrock Rovers players who felt that they were probably good enough, didn't get the call. And to deal with the disappointment, because as Dan will tell you, like, all these kids now will have agents, you know, they'll have people looking at them, they'll have parents, they'll have the pressure of being on live TV, and there will be a lot of disappointments as well. There'll be injuries, there'll be like loss of form. We saw even with young Ben Curtis this week, there can be mental challenges as well. Ben would be Sam's brother. Sam has been one of the youngest players ever to play for Pats as well prior to Mason. But I think there's a real kind of need to look after the individuals involved that are going to have setbacks, because say today they might get hockeyed by Spain, for example, but it's more than that. It's more that they're not going to, as David says, most of these players are not going to play for the senior team, and it's managing the expectations, managing agents, managing managers, and all of that's really important, I think.
Yeah, and just one last thing. David. Yeah.
Well, I was just going to say that the other quick thing they have to do, right, is harness all this good publicity and bring it and not be exclusive just to back home, right? Because say 18 out of 20 are from League of Ireland. I think I've told you this before, but I've got a lad who's in an academy in England, right? I got a notification from the Welsh FA. Yeah, and he's 12. Now, my point being, Ireland should still be absolutely casting their net, irrespective of how they do in this under 17.
Very good point, David.
To get anyone and use it and go, right, here we go. This is how we've done. And you cast your net wide. You know, why are Wales getting in contact with, you know, a professional club in England and been able to get that form through to parents going, have you got any Welsh heritage? Now, what Ireland should be doing is exactly the same, you know, getting it out there all over, casting to every professional club in England, right, from under 12s, who have you got who's got any Irish heritage? So you piggyback on the back of this goodwill, and you don't just confine it to like now and the League of Ireland and the 18, the 20 there, you cast it wide and you go, right, bang, here we are. We've reached this stage with our kids. You want to, who's around? What, you know, let's get that net, cast it really wide, and we gather that pool in. It doesn't mean you have to use them, but I think sometimes you can just rest on this, thinking, right, this is it. We're good enough. We're content with how we're doing. We'll just focus on this, and I think you've got to harness that.
Yeah, I'd be surprised if they're. I think they still are doing that to a degree. You do see with some of these.
You say to a degree, though.
I know. I think they are. I think you see the 16, 17s, 19s. You do see players getting dropped in, you know, that are sort of new names at various times. Like they obviously had, like, you know, people like Mark O'Toole working for the FAI, you know, who found Declan Rice amongst others. I still think that they are looking. I'm not sure if they're doing it as directly though as what David says with that Welsh example. But the one thing I was going to say, I mean, you look at the other nations there in the last eight. I'm not going to list them all, but, you know, Germany are there, Switzerland, Poland, England, France. I think France are there. But I just did. I just realized I couldn't remember the others. I think Switzerland. Ireland have no right to be there. Like, this is a very important point. Like, our infrastructure still that we offer in this country is disgraceful, right? Like, you know, it's and people have sat here and talked about funding it. I've sort of made the point around this that, yeah, sometimes football just looks like it's begging all the time. But, like, you look at other countries and they do actually, it's not unusual for, and as UEFA released a report last week that looked at this. And, like, I made reference to it yesterday, you know, like similar sized countries to Ireland, their youth budget, like, you know, be 15, 20, 25%. Some of it could come from, like, state funds, you know, state funding, because there's actually a benefit to this. It's not just about making your team good. It's about, you know, health benefits, about looking after, you know, the well-being of young footballers, providing sport, which can be a great function for people. And the other element of resting on our laurels is, and I think people are concerned about this in a way, the team does well and then you tend to think that everything is okay here too. You know, it's almost taken for granted that, yeah, the coaches are doing very well. You know, the underage coaches at FAI are doing well, the people at the clubs, the schoolboy clubs who've met these players, everything's fine. Everything's not fine. Like, they're actually exceeding reasonable expectation, and they're making the case for a more sustained level of investment. And we've spoken a lot recently about racing and the betting tax and all of that stuff. Like, the point will be made by the government in support of racing that, well, we are competing with other jurisdictions that receive like large levels of state funding. That exists in football too. And I think the under-17s, it's timely for them to make the case, because there's a great buzz for everyone talking about this and everyone likes the next big thing. But we're still relying on a lot of fortune and a lot of, you know, brilliance of individuals who are, you know, volunteer coaches.
I don't think it's fortune, Dan.
No, no, sorry. I'm, okay. not, saying for, I'm not saying it's fortune, yeah. but I'm just saying
I think
that
it's people performing way beyond the guaranteed production line. The people be performing way beyond what they should be performing because of their own hard work and their own qualities, rather than, I think we probably have a very, we have a football obsessed country as well, regardless of every other sport. Football is the sport that most kids want to play. And you mentioned the sons of and daughters of immigrants. Generally, they're going to, by and large, want to play football over anything else. This is a massive boon for football. But as Dan says, you know, we've had, I think, a couple of months now, a fairly sustained, not propaganda, but a narrative of we're not looking after football in this country. And I do think government is finally waking up to this, and this will wake them up even more.
Okay, you just got to go to a break here. Dortmund are throwing this away in the Bundesliga. I can't believe this. Like, it's a 10 years of Bayern Munich titles. Dortmund just need to win today against Mainz. They're 2-0 down at home. And Munich are leading against Cologne as well. So, yeah, it's 2001 all over again with Schalke, it seems.
You'd want some Cologne today in that heat, JD.
Well, you know, I only wear it sometimes. Cologne 0, Bayern Munich 1 at halftime. This is a very, very funny text. I'm going to get to in a moment. A serious one beforehand. But, lads, was down at Turner's Cross last night. Brilliant evening, weather, atmosphere and matching parts. Buzzing leaving the ground. To get home and see the vile abuse Stephen Bradley was subjected to is utterly disgraceful. The word suitable to describe these individuals wouldn't be suitable post-watershed. Never mind now, says Mick. Another texter. Hi, JD. Listening to Football Saturday last week, I noticed Johnny Ward wasn't on the panel. I thought nothing of it until later that evening when my mother, who's an avid hillwalker, mentioned that Johnny Ward from Galway has summited Mount Everest. At which point, I put two and two together and got five. But a quick Google soon told me that it was the adventurer and blogger, in inverted commas, Johnny Ward, not the broadcaster and journalist Johnny Ward. So I suppose it's safe to say Johnny the journalist is not dialing into the show from base camp this afternoon.
Yeah, there's a Max Power syndrome.
Climbers talking about just some fella halfway up there talking about Evan Ferguson.
Shut him up.
Yeah.
That Johnny Ward has achieved a lot. Fair play to him. Yeah.
Is it Johnny Ward in Fair City as well?
You're yeah. Like, oh yes, yeah, so Johnny Ward in Fair City. He was in Love Hate. Yeah.
Is it's the character's name, or is he the
actor's name?
No, the actor's name is Johnny Ward.
What, and who does he play?
But like, a few years ago his dad passed away, like, very sadly, and I was getting loads of texts like commiserating, like, I'm really sorry about your dad, from like jockeys and all. I was like, what do I not know here? So I was really mad, and I said over, if I ever met the actor Johnny after a particular time had passed, I would tell him about this. But there you are, Johnny, I've told you now. There we go.
Are you in the top three Johnny Wards? Are you number three behind the adventurer and
I put myself third anyway. Yeah. But I'd be in the top three of those three.
Have you ever met another David Connolly, David?
No. However, someone, this was years ago, right? Someone, and it wasn't me. Someone impersonated me in a hotel and ran up a big bar and got kicked out. And they said they were me. So, and they didn't pay, right? So I had to actually, you know, talk to the police or whatever. And you know, I was like 200 miles away. But yeah. There we go.
Dan McConnell is editor of the Business Post. I don't know if that's ever used to be with the Indo.
Consistently, no. That's good. That's gone on for years.
There's no McDonald's. No Dan McDonald's.
No, but Dan McConnell, this is like 20 years now of this, and like we both do a little bit of radio and various appearances, and like he's got, you know, payment meant for me and vice versa.
Right, okay.
I mean, it's like genuinely, it's been a shambles over a long period of time.
I met John Duggan from the United States in a pub in Dublin once. So we did the John Duggan photos together.
Did you have like a Milhouse moment? I thought there was only one Milhouse.
No. I'm going to take a break. 5-3-1-6-1 a text.
That's,
in.
There's only one John Duggan.
We're back after this.
Off the Ball's cash machine. This is your chance to win an incredible €60,000. After Liz's massive win on Thursday, someone missed the opportunity to continue the cash machine winning streak when they missed our call today. It means there's a big rollover for the weekend. If you've entered since 5pm on Thursday, you're still in to win, but you must know the new number, which is €60,345.74. Text OTB and only OTB to 57557 to play. That's 57557. Get your entry in by 3pm on Monday, and across the Go Loud network of stations, Barry Dunn will be making the all-important call. If your phone rings, answer it within five rings. Tell him that exact amount in euro and cent, and you will win the cash. So remember that amount again, €60,345.74. Over 18s only, text will cost €2.50 plus your standard message rate to play. You are playing across the Go Loud network of stations, and full terms and conditions are available on offtheball.com. And a reminder that if you're listening to this after 3pm on Monday, May 29th, don't enter unless you know the current cash machine amount, as you will be charged and your entry will be invalid.
And you're welcome back to Off the Ball Saturday here on News Talk. John Ligon with you as always till five. This is Football Saturday. Remember, football on Off the Ball brought to you by Sky. Don't miss Everton against Bournemouth as they fight to stay in the Premier League on Super Sunday, live only on Sky Sports. You can text us on 53106 at the cost of 30 cents. Tweet us at Off the Ball. Listen across the country on this beautiful day on News Talk. Also watch us if you'd like on the digital and social channels for Off the Ball, for Twitter at Off the Ball, YouTube and on Facebook. We also podcast a show on the Off the Ball section of the Go Loud Network. It's also available wherever you get your pods. We're joined on the line by David Connolly, former Republic of Ireland striker, played at the World Cup, and in studio by the football correspondent of the Irish Independent, Dan McDonnell, and the broadcaster and journalist, Johnny Ward, to go through the scores in sport, what's going on around the world. We know that Coventry and Luton are playing at Wembley 4:45. In the Scottish Premiership, Celtic 5, Aberdeen 0. A result, Hearts 1, Hibernian 1 a result, and St Mirren 0, Rangers 3. Piemont leads Shelburne 1-0 in the Women's Premier Division into the second half at Talca Park. We also have in the Women's Super League, Chelsea closing in on the title 2-0 up away to Reading. It's Liverpool 0, Man United 0. Villa 1, Aston Villa 1-0 up away to Arsenal. Brighton 0, Leicester 0. It is Manchester City 0, Everton 0, and West Ham 2, Spurs 1. And Dortmund are throwing away the Bundesliga. They're 2-0
down. Give them time, JD.
2-0 down to Mainz at home, with Munich leading 1-0 away to Cologne. So at the moment, Munich are champions. And in the Football Championship, Round 1, Cork 1-7, Louth 5 points at Park Charlton in Navan. I will give you the results of the Irish 2000 Guineas in a moment. Carlow and Offaly throwing in the John McDonagh Cup final at 4:45. That is what's going on around the block.
Just got a text in from Kevin Martin, who is involved with Nace Footballers, and he was relaying the story of how he was in a kind of a physio clinic one day, probably, you know, waiting to get called, and the lady comes in, "Kevin Martin, please," and two people stand up at the same time. He's only there with former Offaly hurler Kevin Martin. So the two of them just, and they probably had this kind of Millhouse moment, but I mean, you can only expect. I mean, there have to be some anecdotes where you've gotten into a situation where your name has gotten you in trouble. And we all have fairly generic names, like Duggan, McDonald, Ward, Connolly. It's fairly standard stuff, and we fairly standard first names, so I'm sure
I'll have to think about it.
You've had it. You have a good story, obviously.
Yeah,
they fell in the pub.
How
do you know? How do you mention his name? Like, or how?
Well, I'm one of these people. When I go sometimes to pubs, I kind of talk to everybody.
Yeah, very weird.
But do you introduce yourself with your surname as well as your
John Duggan?
Yeah, yeah, like, do you know who I am?
It's your radio voice. That's the problem. You just start presenting shows.
No, it's just like I quite like speaking to people who are maybe here on holiday, like Americans and stuff.
Yeah, you do actually.
I quite like getting the story. You know, what do you plan for like the trip around Ireland and stuff, and give them a few recommendations and stuff. So that's how I got taught. Sometimes I do that. And if the bar, like I'm a bar person, sit at the bar and kind of you just talk to the randomers. So no problem doing that. How the John Duggan from America. David Connolly, what we're going to do is we're going to pick our Premier League team of the season. So hopefully you might have done a bit of Uber Wiley, as they say in Ireland, a bit of homework on it. Who's your goalie?
My goalie is Nick Pope.
Okay, Nick Pope.
So, I mean, I kind of picked my team based on stuff I've seen live, you know, a little bit of you know, telly or whatever, but mostly those players that I think I've worked on and seen live. And yeah, I think Nick's done great. He had that sort of moment of madness when he rushed out of his goal, got sent off, missed the cup final. That was against Liverpool. But other than that, you know, I think he's been brilliant. And you know, there might be better players with better goalies with the ball at their feet. and all that, you know, if you want to be picky. But I think, it's surprising he wasn't in the England squad, but it's Nick Pope for me.
I've gone for Alisson, as Klopp told everybody he was Liverpool's best player this season. I can't put two Liverpool players in, so I'm going to pick one, and that is Alisson, who is second in terms of clean sheets behind De Gea, of all people. So Alisson's my goalie.
Yeah, I went Alisson, but I mean, I'm not. It's the position I probably thought the least about. I don't really have a strong view in it. I think Nick Pope is obviously the other. Seems like the other contender that could be mentioned. I went for Alisson.
Would you go for
Alisson? Yeah, I think he's been right back to his best and has been overworked.
And your back four, or if it is a back four, David Connolly.
Me, my back. Oh, you want all of them? Yeah. Okay, so I'll go with. Jeez, who do you put a right back? Because I haven't selected probably my favourite right back, but I've gone with Trippier.
Yeah.
I've gone with Lewis Dunk.
Right.
And as I said, I'm choosing lads that I've seen live and have impressed me, you know, and based off their season. And whenever I've seen Lewis Dunk, like I've seen Brighton, has been brilliant. Saliba beside him. For the same, and then left back, a bit of a left field one. My son absolutely crucified me for this, but based on how I'm going to play, I think he's going to do very well. And it's under the radar. It's not, no one would choose him, but it's Rico Henry from Brentford.
Rico Henry.
Let me tell you, he is a fantastic player. Fantastic. I haven't seen many people beat him. He's at an unfashionable club, probably. Doesn't get recognised. I know Ivan Toney's in the squad, but I mean, I don't think I've ever seen him below an 8 out of 10. And I love Andy Robertson. He would be my ideal lefty, but I'm playing so attacking. I need someone who's a bit more defensive minded. So I'm going with Rico Henry.
I think all our teams might be a little bit attacking, as it were.
Yeah, I went for Kieran Trippier as well, because he's Newcastle's player of the season. I think he's been a great leader for Newcastle in their rush to the Champions League. I went for John Stones, who's had a great season, very versatile, and I've gone for him as one of the centre-backs, as has William Saliba, has gone to my team as well, part of Arsenal's charge to be a title challenger, and they really missed him at the end of the season. Brilliant young talent. And I went for my left-back, Nathan Ake was my left-back, because I think we haven't heard of João Cancelo's name being mentioned. I think Ake's really stepped up there, so... Ake, Saliba, Stones and Trippier.
Yeah, I put Trippier right back. I needed to get a Newcastle player in, to be honest. And Kyle Walker didn't play enough. He actually had that big long break before the World Cup. He still is the best right back, but he didn't. If you're doing a team of the season, you have to reflect that. Saliba as well. I think the reasons you've both put him in. I put Ruben Diaz in. I think he's just consistently had a very high bar. And I put Zinchenko at left full. I suppose Arsenal are one of the stories of the season, and he's such a big player for them in that early part. But I've shoehorned a Brighton player in further up the pitch, not Evan Ferguson. But I do think, like Brighton and Brentford, I think those stories probably should be reflected in teams of the season. You know that they are like you look at the teams who've hit a high bar. You can pick like the best 11 across the season. And, you know, this is why, you know, sometimes the PFA teams, for example, you see like players would put in Pogba at various times, or they put in the player who played the best against them. And certain players always get in these teams, whether it's England or Ireland or Scotland or whatever. But I think there's an element sometimes of reflecting players as well who've played above themselves or had their best ever season as well. So I've no issues with a Brentford player being chucked in because they've been really good.
Johnny, who's your back four?
Trippier, Stone, Saliba and Zinchenko. Trippier, I think, he was a brilliant signing. Like, he wasn't all that young when Newcastle signed him as well. Brilliant at set pieces. I think the rest are fairly self-explanatory. Zinchenko, he might be a little bit lucky to get in, but I just love him as a player. I think that back four is very solid and is going to do well going forward as well. I'd probably have Kyle Walker ahead of Trippier if he'd played more. Brilliant talent.
Yeah, and put Vinicius in his pocket, didn't he? In that
Reece James as well, if Chelsea were
in the basket. And if he was fit, yeah. David Connolly, your midfield?
I didn't know about this only one player from each team, so that's kind
that's
of...
Just no, we never said that.
That's no, just no, a joke.
We never said that.
No, no.
Oh, well, I mean, I quite like that, actually. That's okay. Not a bad idea. But anyway, as a holding midfield player, I've gone for Rodri. Yeah. As my holding midfield player. On the left wing, I've gone for Rashford. On the right wing, I've gone for Mo Salah. And then now I've got a bit of a problem because I'm going for a 4-1-4-1, and I want to get Harry Kane in there, but he's not going to play as a sort of 8 or a 10, but in my team he is. So I've gone for Harry Kane and Martin Odegaard. So that's my 4-1 and then 4, and all I'm left with is a striker.
Haaland, yeah?
Haaland. Yeah, let's do our other six here in one go, because they are probably interlinked,
yeah,
aren't they?
Yeah.
So what's, is that Salah on one side, Rashford on the other, is it? Is that,
yeah.
That's a hell of a team to watch, that team, with Kane in the hole as well. I mean, decent.
You left a Bruno out, David.
Yeah, but because you said only one City player, so I just wiped
No, we didn't. I mean, it's just a miscommunication, sorry.
Oh, sorry. Well, no, then I put in Odegaard instead of De Bruyne because I'd already had Rodri as the Man City and Haaland. So, yes, obviously, geez, I'm not mad. De Bruyne in. Yeah, and I'd have to take Odegaard out.
Okay, but you wouldn't change anything else?
I wouldn't change anything else. No, I'm pretty happy with that team. Yeah.
That is an attacking lineup. So just Dave Connolly's team, Pope, Trippier, Dunk, Saliba, Rico Henry, Rodri, Rashford, Mo Salah, Kane, De Bruyne and Haaland.
Right, JD, give us your...
I've gone for De Bruyne, the league's playmaker, leads and assists. Rodri, the city's clock, he's the fulcrum. Odegaard's got 15 goals this season, the Arsenal captain. And then the forward players, Bukayo Saka, who I think has been a huge part of Arsenal's charge. Anybody could argue for Mo Salah here, but he's in every season. I just think, just in terms of the rhythm of the season, I think Saka would be the man for me, even if Salah beats some of the stats. Haaland, obviously, 36 goals. And I'm going to go for my last player, Jack Grealish, because I think that he's kept Foden out of the City team, which is no mean feat. I think he's had a really good season since the World Cup, and he probably deserves a bit more credit than he gets.
Yeah, that's fair enough. I did think about Grealish. The midfield three, I went for the same as you, De Bruyne, Rodri and Odegaard, so I'm not going to repeat the reasons. Salah on the right side of a three for me. Very technical here. We are imagining how this works out.
Trying to think of you out of the ball, Dan.
Salah right side, Haaland through the middle, and I went for a little bit of a wild card in the left. I've got such buzz out of watching Brighton, and I know they play a different system. They play like a sort of a 4-2-4, but Matoma I think has been brilliant. You know, and actually I looked at Grealish. Matoma and Grealish are very similar stats, but obviously Matoma's playing for Brighton.
Yeah,
you know, one's playing for Man City, and it's his. You know, he's a newcomer to the league, and he's just been sensational. So I just decided to stick him in there. Rashford is obviously another obvious shout.
Yeah, he was definitely one I was thinking of getting in. Gone with Rodri, Gundogan and Odegaard, which obviously means leaving out De Bruyne, who I think was kind of slow to get going this season. He had the World Cup as well, and he's now finishing the season in excellent form. Up front, this is a little bit tricky, so I've gone with Saka and Rashford. And I've left Salah out, even though I think Salah's been he's actually had a very good season on stats, and I think he's struggled with his strike partners compared to other seasons. He's gotten more assists, but he hasn't looked like Liverpool have chopped and changed up front. I don't think that's helped. And a bit like you say, he should probably be in the team. But I've gone with Saka's a fantastic footballer. I think Rashford, just the story behind, you know, his return to form, and then finally, obviously, I've gone with Evan Ferguson. he's just better outside the box. No, I've obviously gone with how do you spell his name?
Haaland.
By any metric, the standards, like,
I was sending Johnny goals. I sent Johnny Jesus clips Christ the other night of Haaland outside the box.
How was I blindsided after 51 minutes of the show this week by that punchline?
36 goals. Dan, like, where was I the other night? I wasn't actually even watching the game, and I was getting Haaland v Ferguson updates, and Ferguson hadn't even started. Then it was like he felt this need with balance. Oh well, Ferguson actually did two good things outside.
He actually
the
did
box
a two. Actually, had great two great touches and injury time. To, in fairness to him, but Haaland did have one pretty good.
And they, yeah, the yeah. So that's it. They're good teams. Very attacking, to be fair. Yeah, very attacking. Who's the manager then? Actually,
Oh, Guardiola.
Well, no, I think we are all the respective managers. I think that's the point of the team. Just imagine your team.
Is Guardiola on Premier League? I'm not so sure.
Well, he could do the Zerbi, but then you have to play 4-2-4. You have to play a completely different
system. I think Arteta's done better with what he has than Guardiola, maybe. But, yeah, it's got to be Guardiola, I suppose. Good fun.
Not much. No, it is good fun. And I mean, has anybody picked a Manchester United player? Or Rashford?
Rashford, yeah.
Yeah.
I think Casemiro's had a good season.
What do you think of our selections, David?
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm a huge Mo Salah fan, and I'm a huge Harry Kane fan. And I can't believe that. I think all of you have left either one of them out, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I think Harry Kane is probably the most complete player. The most complete player in the league.
He's playing for Spurs, though. Like, you can't put anyone from Spurs in with.
But you look at the opposite that he actually scored all those.
No, I agree with David. I'm just kind of taking the. Yeah, he's 28 goals.
I mean, did you leave him out, John? I mean, that's scandalous.
I
did.
Well, I mean, I don't want to be accused of bias. And I don't want to give Daniel Levy any credit either.
So, I mean, him and Mo, they definitely get in my team. But, I mean, look, it's been a good season. The manager's an interesting one because I think. There've been some, I think, some great managerial appointments. You know, look at Emery, Lopetegui's done well. But I know we're talking, say, at different ends of the table. But you know, De Zerbi's done well. I mean,
Eddie Howe, like
Eddie Howe's done great. You know, so I think some of the coaches have really covered themselves in a lot of glory this season. You know, I think the standard has gone through the roof. I think for the coaches that have. Come in and done, you know, I think they've done really, really well.
Dortmund still behind 2-0, 64 minutes into the game against Mainz at home. They're about to blow the Bundesliga. And we have Munich 1-0 up away to Cologne. That's what's going on there. In the Women's Premier Division, we're now full-time. P-Manch United, a big win, 1-0 away to Shelburne. At Talca Park, Dealer Waves and Bows kick off at 4 at UCD Bowl. In the Scotland, Celtic 5, Aberdeen 0, Hearts 1, Hibs 1 and St Mirren 0, Rangers 3, all results from earlier. And the Women's Super League, Chelsea set for the title, 2-0 up away to Reading. Arsenal 0, Villa 2, Brighton 0, Leicester 0, goalless as well between Liverpool and Man United. Man City lead Everton 1-0, it's West Ham 2, Spurs 2.
Paddington has won the Guineas, did you just mention that?
Did not mention that, what price?
3-1, yeah. So Paddington, Aiden wins it with a horse that didn't even go to Newmarket.
There you go. Cork 1-8, Louth 7 points at Park Charlton, half-time in the All-Ireland Senior Football Championship Round 1. And we'll give you the qualifying result from the Monaco Grand Prix as soon as we get it. It's Dan McDonald of the Irish Independent, Johnny Ward and studio as well, and David Connolly on the line for Football Saturday. Love to hear from you, 53106. We're back after the news. And you're welcome back, listeners, to Off the Ball Saturday News Talk. John Duggan with you 3 to 5 on Football Saturday. Remember, Football and Off the Ball brought to you by Sky. Don't miss Leicester take on West Ham as they fight relegation on Super Sunday live only on Sky Sports. You can text us 53106. Tweet us at Off the Ball. Listen across the country on this beautiful day on your radio and News Talk. Also watch us if you'd like on the Off the Ball digital and social channels. We're joined in studio by Dan McDonald of the Irish Independent and the broadcaster and journalist Johnny Ward. And on the line by the former Republic of Ireland striker David Connolly. Dortmund have pulled a goal back as they bid to win the Bundesliga. They're 2-1 down now to Mainz, 72 minutes in. They need to win because Munich are winning away to Cologne.
Yeah, they've just missed a good chance there as well. So it does look like they've got a bit of belief from scoring. Sort of it could be a Man City QPR style thing if they pull it back. And QPR aren't quite relegated, but you know, they are coming from behind. So we shall see what they've got. They've got 18 minutes in injury time to do it. City had. They were 2-1 down at this point, I think, weren't they? So
they were. Never forget the day.
Mention as well, obviously, you were slagging me earlier on the season because it was on about young Luke McNally, who was ex-Pats and Drogheda. He was on loan at Drogheda, wasn't he? And went to Burnley, went on loan again to Coventry. And I think, did Coventry lose their first 7 games or something?
When Luke McNally went there, anyway, their record was poor. He's definitely had a good time of it.
And I was actually texting his dad during the week and he said, like, the buzz they're getting off it is incredible. And if they do get promoted, I don't know where, like, Luke will be contracted.
He's playing, he's in the team.
Yeah, he plays right of a three for Mark Robbins, obviously, who a lot of the more senior members of the listenership will know. And he'll obviously be, so if Coventry go up, he'll have spent the season alone with the team who'll be in the Premier League next season. And he's contracted to a team which is in the Premier League next season with Burnley. So it's a really endearingly quirky tie between Coventry and Luton. You know, I think real old school fans remember both in the first division and
yes, the 80s. Yeah,
I actually don't remember Luton. I don't really remember Luton. I remember kind of, was it Lukic in goal? Who was their goalkeeper back in the day?
Les Healy was their goalkeeper.
Les Healy, maybe. I vaguely remember Luton, but I don't remember them obviously in the top flight. And that little ground, Kenilworth Road, would be just so cool. But hopefully for Luke, Coventry do it because it's been a phenomenal season, and Shawnee Maguire, who was on during the week, obviously has been there as well.
Mentioning Les Healy, I don't know if you read that incredible piece during the week in the Times. Matt Dickinson wrote it, but it's inspired by a book that Les Healy's son has written about Les Healy's life. So Les Healy obviously passed away tragically. I think he was 43 when he passed away. the goalkeeper for Manchester United in 1990. You talk about Mark Robbins, but Les Seeley came in and played when Jim Leighton got dropped after the first game. So I think his son went back and wanted to, obviously was always curious about doing more about his dad's, you know, his dad's career or whatever. And he was down, I think, watching a game at Manchester United one day, and he was told by a coach there that Les Seeley had effectively recorded a lot of his memoirs on tapes, on old cassettes.
Wow.
And this coach found the tapes, and Les Seeley's son, with the help of a journalist, listen back to them. In fact, I'm not even sure the son was able to listen to them, but the journalist has done it, and they've managed to do it to sort of put together a book, you know, with his memories, including his memories of the final in 1990, and a lot of other stories, because he had a very colourful life, a very colourful character, Les Seeley. But yeah, people could seek out that piece. It's incredible. Yeah. Just as you mentioned, I'm completely randomly.
Yeah, no,
but there's a book coming out around Les Seeley's career.
And he also played for Coventry. Played for Coventry and Luton.
Ah, there we go.
There you go. The big game, isn't it, David? Big game for both clubs.
Yeah, big game. I mean, probably the final that I don't think anyone expected, but, you know, they're there. And Luton are, geez, they're tough to play against. They are really high energy. You know, they've got pace all over the park. Their front two are a nightmare to deal with. I mean, they are huge. They're quick. They're good with their feet. They're great in the air. So, you know, they're going to be tough to stop, because I guess if you're comparing, it's like beauty against the beast, because Mark Robbins, yeah, as we all know, at Coventry, loves to play, you know, the beautiful game, so to speak. Rob Edwards at Luton, no, they play for territory. They hit the channels. They play to the front two and play off that. They get long throws. They put balls in the box, and, you know, they are a completely different type of team. And, you know, but tough one to call. I guess, you know, difficult. I hope Mark Robbins does it at Coventry, but it wouldn't surprise me if Luton came out on top, because they've had a great season and they are a good team, and they play how they play very, very well.
Coventry won the FA Cup in 1987. Luton won the League Cup in 1988. Remember those games well.
Brian Steen and McCarford.
Ashley Grimes played for Luton in that game.
Patrick McCann, who's a racing poster and is a big Coventry fan, I've been over to games with him. I have loads of relations in Coventry. He would have been at the cup final in 87, and kind of like, I suppose you come in and out of love with the team when they left Highfield Road and they went into the Ricoh Arena, what's the name of the stadium they're in, the Wasp Stadium, whatever it's called, the Ricoh Arena, I think. And it's like, it's one of these modern stadia, and, you know, it is what it is, but it's amazing to think that I saw them in during Cheltenham. They were in League Two, actually, I remember. And now, yeah, it's an amazing rally.
And the time, the tables are turned, right? Because Wasps have basically gone.
They are, I read recently, David, that English Premiership rugby teams are losing on average $4 million a year. And obviously they're gone. London Irish being the obvious one for us, I suppose.
Yeah, exactly. And obviously they got in and were sharing with Brentford, weren't they? You know, shared a pitch. But, I mean, can you imagine? I went to work on Coventry, and this is no word of a lie, right? No word of a lie. They were playing at St Andrews, and I drove to Coventry. I drove to the Ricoh. And I got there, and I was like, oh, God, they don't play here anymore. What am I doing?
That is so like something I would do, like, honestly. I think we'd get on very well.
Yeah.
Johnny Connolly.
Yeah, it's... what they were doing, what happened to them was just and as you say, they didn't, you know, they weren't playing at home. They didn't win any of the first 10 or whatever. They've only spent, I think, 17 days in the top six. I think it's 17. I could be wrong. And like Blackburn had spent 162, and Coventry have got in there at the death. And
just a team like that, David, like, how, see, it's almost like they didn't plan for it. So if Coventry do end up like getting to the Premier League, where do they go from there?
Do you know what, Johnny? Who cares? Who cares? Where they go is, I guess, they will take the money, you know, and have a safe future.
Okay.
You know, and they'll give it a go, but they will, you know, I think that they'll worry about that another time, you know. Yeah, the shame will be that they'll probably, Jokeres will probably go. You know, Hamer might go, and then Mark's got to rebuild again. But, you know, nonetheless, they've to reach the final has been an incredible achievement, I guess.
Yeah, it's probably the same for either club. If anyone's listening to this after it's over or whatever, like whoever goes up, it's bonus territory for them. And the thing is, I mean, talking about like clubs losing money in the English Premiership, I mean, the reality is most of the clubs in the Championship and League One are losing money as well. But it's all about trying to get at the Premier League money. And then all of a sudden you get into that Premier League territory and you have payments that are on another level, and that's the dream that everyone's chasing. But when you've two teams who haven't thrown everything at it to get there,
right?
It's an incredible story.
You see, speaking of the Premiership rugby, it's kind of reached a certain place. Just Stop Oil protesters have invaded the pitch and thrown powder onto the playing surface at Twickenham during the Premiership rugby final. Cologne have equalised against Munich. Dortmund are back on top.
This is
we've put the wrong game on here. I'm to blame for this. I told us to put on Dortmund in the studio.
And they're Dortmund fans celebrating even though they're 2-1 down to Mainz 80 minutes in. This is like 2001 all over again when Schalke were denied by Munich.
Yeah.
It's very much Aguero, isn't it, as you said.
Sort of in a different version of it.
And some nice messages in here, 53106, and someone's not so nice. Harry Kane, 2 World Cup semis, 1 Euro final, 1 Champions League final, common denominator, did nothing in any of them, says Michael. Michael, that's very blasphemous and unfair. Hamilton Academical were unlucky to be relegated in the playoff territory during the week. Heart goes out to Daniel O'Reilly, ex-Shells, Drogheda, Salford, and Leeds, a young player who stood up there to take the 6th penalty in relegation in the Scottish Championship Division 2 saves, says John Kenny, Eden Derry.
Yeah, Daniel O'Reilly, it's sort of low-key under the radar, but we got a move to Hamilton in the last year or so, yeah.
All right, lads, do you think players like Mason Mealy are better off going to Spain or Italy rather than England? I went to Stoke when I was younger. I always regret not chancing somewhere on the continent. Ended up coming back and picking up the pieces, but made a life of it nonetheless. Anyway, will you wish my daughter a happy christening from Aaron and Bray? Well, I hope you're having a great day, Aaron.
Yeah, I think Mason Mealy, I mentioned it in the piece with Clive Clark, and just the vibe is I'm not sure if he can go to England later. He can go to Europe next year when he's 16. But I got the sense maybe it's not 100% guaranteed they'll go that route, that they could wait for England. But it'll work for some people. It won't work for others. Like Kevin Zeffie, the whole family moved over to Milan, say. And we've seen other players go and do it. And as we mentioned, Matthew Murr is going to Hoffenheim, who's playing in that competition. But some other people would look at it and go, language, various things. As Johnny Logan would say, what's another year? Or what's another 2 years? And then
what's
you just go at 18.
Eurovision?
Yeah.
Sorry, John, but that's the truth. Michael's been back in touch about Harry Kane. that's funny.
He's not backing down, yeah. It'll be interesting for Amelia because it's just such a mad thing that you cannot go to the UK until you're 18. And there are quite a few players who've made the move to European teams that aren't in Britain. And it will become more of a thing, even... Brexit is, I don't know, like it was...
Albarn said, Brexit is rubbish.
I bet not a single person who voted for Brexit voted it thinking, oh, by the way, we won't be able to sign Irish players.
I'd say it's unlikely. You
know what I mean? I'd say it's pretty unlikely, but like...
But it's funny, I know that there's some chat that some of the clubs in England now are actually thinking, on one hand, they don't get the access to like the Fabregas at 16 or whoever it might be, but actually it is giving more English kids opportunities at that age, and they're seeing some positives from it as well too.
The live table is unbelievable in the Bundesliga. So Dortmund to 70 points, Munich on 69, with Dortmund 2-1 down at home to Mainz 84 minutes on the watch, and Cologne have equalised against Munich 1-1 in Cologne. Got a nice message here, David Connolly, from one of our YouTube commenters. Aaron, love the show. Currently serving in Syria, but feel close to home with OTB. Big Offaly, United and Bose fans. Everything relatively rosy at the moment. P.S. My old lad played Gaelic with David's dad, Tom, in London. Heard some great stories about him.
Ah, that's nice, yeah.
Your dad was a hurler, wasn't he?
I did both.
Great story. And your dad moved over from Galway, where Johnny's from.
Yeah.
Connolly is like 10 of Henny in Galway, yeah.
Yeah, my sister's there now. She's just gone over, so she's over there for a few days in Galway.
It is the best place in the world. But the full swing of Ireland becoming a country now that is welcoming immigrants who want a better life here compared to the days of Dave's dad and my father, who went to Birmingham, and so many, like my father would tell me that the whole two villages, three villages around him literally decimated. Everyone was gone in the, what would that be, the 50s?
60s.
50s and 60s. 50s particularly bleak, and then it improved, but now we've gone full circle where we've gotten... we've had all these players with like David, who you know, it's second generation or whatever, playing for Ireland, been very proud to play for Ireland, where now it's become kids of sons of Nigerians and sons of Albanians and sons of wherever you're having yourself, who've come over here to try to live a better life.
We have still Dortmund 2-1 down to Mainz, 87 minutes on the watch now. Are they going to win the Bundesliga? They've also missed a penalty, and at the moment it is still 1-1 between Cologne and Bayern
Munich. Yeah, they missed a penalty at 1-0, and the Cologne goal to level things up at Bayern was a penalty. So
Cork 1-12, Louth 1-10 in the football championship round 1 at Park Charlton and Navan. So tight game there, and Max Verstappen is on pole for the Monaco Grand Prix, and our man Westmeath got underway at 4:45 in the football championship, and Paddington won the Irish.
1-2 for Aiden, beat Cairo, like, which two horses that were, I mean, Cairo went to the UAE, Paddington didn't go to the Guineas. He came the same route as Ott had, actually, JD. He won the Madrid, and then he won, was it the Tetrarch? So significant win that for Aiden, because he's by Sayuni as well, who's a sire that he would have you know, gotten a bit of use of, and he could be a nice stallion going forward.
5-3-1-6, Croatia 4 million people, Wales 3 million, both reached a major semi-final and final in recent years. Why can't Ireland do the same? Ireland 17s, 19s, last 221s have all competed well. I don't think it's a fluke, but we need to capitalise on this, as one of our texters.
Yeah, but I mean, Croatia, if you look at it, you know, it's a great sporting country as well. It's not just that they only have one sport as well. That's a mistake that's made. And like, Croatia are a top class. Like, a lot of players have come through Dynamo Zagreb's academy. But also, if you look at the income in Croatia, a lot of it comes from transfer money. It's part of the business there. So they produce talent, but they also develop them and sell them for big money. Here, you know, we do some of that, but it gets a bit messy at a particular point. And, you know, we let people go for next to nothing, but that's because how Ireland is perceived for various reasons.
I thought that Damien Duff's comments were really interesting the other day, JD, where he had a major swipe at, you know, these exit clauses in contracts. And like, I'd have sympathy for clubs if you want a player to stay and you want to enhance your chance on the pitch.
Munich have scored 2-1 away to Cologne. They're back on top of the Bundesliga in the 90th minute.
Oh dear.
There we go. This, so, like, basically,
it's like being back to the start. As someone said, it's like being back to the start of or, you know, lockdown, where you're watching Bundesliga games.
That's all we had.
Actually thinking of that today, but yeah, Damien Duff is like, we need to start commanding good money for these players and stop putting in these exit clauses that they can leave for next to nothing. Because, like, I know Evan Ferguson is a complete outlier, but the money Bowes are going to make from that is astronomical in League of Ireland terms. We'll make the bazooka money look like your appetizer.
Jamal Musiala with the goal for Bayern Munich. They're going to win it for the 11th season in a row, it seems. But, like, Dortmund had it in their hands, and they're 2-1 down to Mainz. What a disaster for them.
Oh, God. It's looking at the scenes. I mean, Mainz are mid-table. It's just
literally the exact same thing happened 22 years ago when Schalke had it in their hands and Munich scored at the death to get a draw and they won the title.
I think the point about Munich as well is people thought, yeah, it'd be great if they didn't win it, because just the messing around they've done this season, and, you know, getting rid of Nagelsmann when they did, and even though he wasn't everyone's cup of tea, and then Tuchel come in and it hadn't really been working, and yet you still fall over the line and win the title.
Yeah. David Connolly, who's going down then? Southampton are already down from the Premier League. Who else are going down of the three? Everton, Leicester, Leeds?
I think Leicester and Leeds, to be honest.
Yeah.
I think Leicester and Leeds. I mean, I just don't know if I can see. Yeah, I think, look, West Ham have got bigger things to worry about, but the final's not for, what, another 10, 12 more days, I think it is. So they've, you know, they can afford to play a strong team, right? Against Leicester, they can afford to play a strong team. So, I don't know. I think Leicester leads. I think Everton are just about going to survive at home to Bournemouth, who I don't think they've won, have they, since they became safe, Bournemouth. So, yeah, I think unfortunately Leicester leads.
It is amazing. Like,
they deserve to go down. Leicester leads. Like, Leicester players seem to have checked out a bit this season, and Leeds, too many managers changing and chopping.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, look, Brighton are getting a lot of plaudits. I mean, Leicester were the Brighton of 4 or 5 years ago, you know, and probably Rodgers made a load of mistakes, probably being too loyal to his goalkeeper, one of them. I think he he promised once Kasper Schmeichel left that Danny Ward would be the number one, but that was a huge mistake. And I think not just one error, but, you know, that was a big error, I think. And I've been in dressing rooms where you might have a goalkeeper like that who has been waiting for his chance. I played with one, and when he got the chance, he wasn't a number one. And he let, you know, he actually left football because he was like, I'm just not cut out to being the number one. And I'm not, you know, don't want to talk ill of Danny Ward, but I just don't think he was the right goalkeeper for them to follow on from Kasper Schmeichel. And Brendan stuck with him way too long, way too long. And I think that was a costly mistake amongst a few others. Yeah.
When you think of the last day dramas, and like it's quite significant tomorrow. The three teams are sort of playing teams that have nothing to play for. And like, I've had a couple of bets lately in markets thinking like the market is completely exaggerating the fact that one team doesn't have something to play for. They've all lost. So like, including Barca during the week, who were playing a team that had like barely won a game all season, lost 3-1. All these teams, like, when, and that's going to add to the drama tomorrow.
But then you have Mainz, yeah.
And then you have the, but like, I was just thinking of the Man United, Liverpool, when Liverpool played Blackburn and Man United were West Ham. Yeah. I was a kid that time. And
the Clasco.
Ludic and Clasco. And like, Man United would beat West Ham like literally any day of the week. But you have this bizarre situation where, like, as a Liverpool fan, I really wanted Man United not to win the league. But that meant Liverpool not beating Blackburn. And there was this bizarre, like, atmosphere in Anfield where Liverpool, I think, came from behind to win 2-1. And the fans were sort of celebrating, sort of not, because the rivalry between Liverpool and Man United at that time was really, really intense, like really intense. And then you had McClosco and Man United just blew it. Like, they, what was it, a 1-1 draw?
Yeah.
Just couldn't at score.
Upton Park, one of my bigger rats.
Andy Cole missing
Andy
chances.
Cole, yeah, yeah. And that was, that drama was, sad to say, I watched it in one of the local pubs, obviously. I wasn't.
You were on the pub Christmas.
I was a young guy.
Dortmund.
That's where we go.
Wow, 2-2.
Oh, it's offside. No. Oh, I have to say Dortmund have had just completely collapsed mentally here. Like, they won a corner a minute ago and no one went over to take it, and one of the players was like, who's taking this corner, you know, and there's like 2 minutes to go. They're just completely they're shook, but they're just banging the ball into the box and trying to get stuff off second balls and crosses. They're just like, they, that's what the time we've had the game on, that's pretty much what they've been doing. But yeah, all over the shop.
Lorky on YouTube, can we get a shout out for one of Ireland's best boxers fighting for a world title tonight? Let's go, Mick Conlon. And yeah, he fights Luis Alberto Lopez in Belfast for the IBF World Featherweight belt. So best of luck to him.
Well, yeah, there's probably reasons he doesn't get coverage, but
yeah. So that's what's going on in terms of the soccer. Coventry Luton 4:45 Wembley, Celtic 5 Aberdeen 0, Hearts 1 Hibernian 1, St Mirren 0 Rangers 3. And the Women's Premier Division, Shelburne 0, Piemont United 1, and DLR Waves 0, Bohemians 0. In the Women's Super League, Chelsea are champions, 3-0 win over Reading. Other results, West Ham 2, Spurs 2, Arsenal 0, Villa 2, Brighton 0, Leicester 1, Liverpool 0, Man United 1, and Manchester City 3, Everton 2. And Cork are now behind against Louth. Louth 1-14, Cork 1-13, and the Football Championship round 1 in Navan. And Max Verstappen on pole for the Grand Prix in Monaco. We're back after this. And you're welcome back to Off the Ball Saturday here on News Talk. John Duggan with you through to five. Our football coverage is in association with Sky. Don't miss the final round of the Premier League on Super Sunday, live only on Sky Sports. Are you a Bayern Munich fan? Well, you'd be happy because you've won the Bundesliga 11th year in a row, a 2-1 win at Cologne, and Dortmund blew it. If they beat Mainz today, they would have been champions, but they were held to a 2-2 draw. So a disaster for Dortmund, to be honest.
Yeah.
They scored it 2-2, and then in fairness, Mainz from the kickoff did do a QPR. They just belted the ball away for no reason. Remember before the Aguero goal, there was a tip off after Dzeko scored, and QPR just booted the ball to oblivion for no apparent reason, gave the ball back. That did happen, but they only had 30 seconds. So they got one or two chances to launch the ball, but they were just launching it a lot. And that was it.
So Bayern Munich have done it again, boringly, but well done to them. So we have just this issue around the GA clubs. There being, and I spoke to Larry McCarthy briefly about this, the president, during the week at the Pittsburgh Steelers launch. of their partnership with Ireland, because there's going to be an NFL game here at Croke Park in the next few years. And like, there's kind of a drive or a reminder almost to underage level to that we don't want competitions for under 12s or from 12 and down. What is the kind of the feeling around soccer? Because obviously soccer in teenagers is quite competitive, and you know, the kind of balance between competitiveness and also kids enjoying the games, not feeling left out.
Yeah, well, no, I think at various ages, like they're reluctant about you know, league tables or a competitive element. I mean, I think different leagues have different approaches. I suppose the big change this year in the under 14 League of Ireland, which is the you know, the national underage leagues are the highest standard now in the country, and this year they're not doing league tables at that level. They've decided to make that decision now. Part of the problem with the league at that level, well, the national underage leagues are getting a lot of love, I suppose, with teams doing well. There's still a lot of flaws with them. Some teams under 14 level are. I mean, David referenced earlier that Shamrock Rovers team, who are meant to be exceptionally good. But you would see then other teams who aren't that well prepared getting hammered, you know, 8-0 or 9-0 or 10-0, because for some of the regional teams, that's the first year they've spent together, and like teams like Rovers in some cases are together, you know, quite some time. And I think naturally there's that element of, well, what are we gaining from this? You know, posting on social media about a 9 or 10-0 win at that level, when, I mean, in all sports, like, you know, participation rates, dropout rates, and we're talking about probably that word that people don't like we're talking about elite level here, but obviously you go further down, I shouldn't even use those terms, but you know, if you have a team who are struggling, you know, to get numbers together, and they're getting hammered every week, and you know, they're being reminded of their results every week, I don't have any particular issue with it. I know some people are very strident about the view that, you know, with a competition at that level, there's no harm, it served them well. But generally, you know, you will find that people are talking about that, or people have gone on to succeed, you know, and it's probably the greater majority are people who maybe dropped away. Now, I think people are always naturally competitive and will probably know the scores in their own head, but the formalisation of it, I don't have a big issue with it.
Remember, I suppose we're talking about an amateur sport as well versus a future professional sport.
Do you remember the unbelievable sketch where it's like, you know, he's this like real old school manager who's like basically like every expletive under the sun to the players, like, go out there, you better have blood in your jersey and all this, and then he goes at the end, you'll know all about it next year when you're under 14. Like, and that was the gag, was like that was actually true. Like, that was when I was a kid, that was how under 12s football was. It was like Gaelic football was absolutely mad. Like, the parents, the coaches, the managers, it was so intense. Like, and they lived and breathed it. Like, and it was absolutely mad when you think about it. And it makes perfect sense what they're doing. Dan's point about football is, I mean, do you remember, like, as a young player, when you thought you were good and you were absolutely... There's one day you play and you just get battered and you're never really the same again. So it's not good for a player's
development. I didn't even get on the pitch, to be honest.
Well, that wasn't great either, actually.
Yeah.
That's part of the problem. You should be getting equal time.
So that's the other thing, yeah. Because, like, and managers should ensure that everyone is getting a game as well. Like, so don't leave kids out. And bear in mind, like, they're young and they're starting off younger and younger and younger now. And at that stage, it's all about... I remember reading an article years ago when... I can't remember who wrote it, but he was absolutely like ripping apart this guy who spoke about managing the under 14 team, and they all knew their job, and it's like, you know, they all know what their job is, and I do this and I do that, and he's like, what are you doing here? You're supposed to be developing their skills. And you look at the Irish footballers that came through, you know, how well were they coached? Like, how well were they coached? Were they doing all the skills from a very early age? And again, to quote Stephen Bradley, I think he believes that you can't get kids playing and developing skills early enough, really. Like, he says, like, under nines is too late. So it's not about winning at all at that level. It's about developing the skills that'll stand you down the line, I think.
There were different views contained within that, though, about, like, some people would say it gets too competitive too early here in football. Some people say it doesn't get competitive early enough. So, like, there's two different sides. Yeah. I don't know if you saw this thing around a couple of weeks ago. It was an ad for an under five team.
What?
Looking for a goalkeeper who could play out from the back. You know, this is now. I mean, I'm almost
this
thinking,
is a joke.
I don't believe that it was. I'll try and find it if I can. But it was like someone looking for a player for a team. You know, I was definitely on a very young level, but you know, must be good with the ball on his feet. A goalkeeper at five.
Something wrong about that. 5-3-1-6. You should never want to win more than the players themselves at any level. Coach the team to want to win, developing to win, not winning to develop, says one of our texters. David Connolly, how competitive it is for your young lad?
I mean, geez, how long we got? I mean,
about five minutes.
Yeah, it's a topic that you could debate for a long, long time. You know, so my lad now in academy football, they don't have league tables, right? They don't publish the results, but you know the results after a game, you know, at 12 years of age. I don't think they've won a game this season. I don't think they've won a game. Now they play Arsenal, they play Tottenham, they play Brighton, they play Chelsea, they play, you know, but a myriad of teams. I couldn't tell you how many games they've won. Very, very few. Very few. Does he come home crying? Is it no? I think they just get on with it when they're kids. However, kind of the team that he left, they are under 12 grassroots and they do publish tables. And, you know, they missed out on promotion this season. They lost the last few games and those kids were crying. And, you know, the pressure of going to go and win and win their last two games to get promoted, it backfired. But look, I kind of see both sides of this, right? In Holland, now at Feyenoord, say, for example, they play from under 11 nationally against all the other academies, and they have tables. You know, they have tables and they're published and they have title winners from under 11, you know. Like the under 15s at Feyenoord just won the league today. You know, that's published. It's online. You can see it on Twitter. But by the same token, you know, I used to run a grassroots team and I took players who, you know, at 8 years of age, other teams didn't want. I mean, at 8 years of age, you know, grassroots, this is like absolutely incredible. Telling a kid that's eight that he's, you know, they don't want him. So, where do I sit in all that? I'm not too sure. Because I think you can still be competitive without necessarily worrying too much about a league table. Saying that, you know, you have to kind of try and keep score somehow because, you know, ultimately, look, if you're an academy, right, and there's 15 boys in 11-a-side team, some of those boys, it's like 0.01%. You're talking about being competitive. A lot of them are making up the number. There might be one player in that team at under 12, one player that might go on and maybe become a professional player. One player. So all the others, you know, can be there to fulfill the needs of the team. You know, does it make it right to publish tables? Have league? I don't know. I'm not sure.
The big challenge for the League of Ireland is to get teams playing other teams of a similar ability. I don't know what the exact answer to that is, and they've made adjustments, but it is definitely a concern. Like for, and you know, you have small clubs taking on big clubs. They are going to tier the underage systems, but I think that's a massive thing because players can just end up probably going out of the game if you're getting kind of hockeyed at under 14. I think it's very feasible you lose interest. That's not good for anyone. It's not developing you as a player either.
No, I think they're trying to do a couple of things as well to change things here about letting players move up and down age groups as well. You know, like you know, sometimes the system is very hard and fast here. Like, you know, when you see a lot of players born in January, February, you know, the relative age effect.
I was born in November, Dan. I always blame that.
It was
August, were you?
Yeah, August, yeah. We were both.
How were you, JD?
Although
October.
The thresholds actually changed when we were younger, so we really got screwed over at that stage. But
were you not August in underage football?
Yeah, but they changed that at a particular point. You would have seen that a lot of teams were lads born later in the year were stronger now we are calendar year now and that's why you see lots of like our top players are born. It's why Evan Ferguson is like freakishly good as well, because he's October, you know. Mason Mealy is November, like, and that's, you know, generally a lot of the better kids in generations are January, February, because they're just bigger, stronger in some cases.
That's no word of a lie.
But they've tried like biobanding, I think, they've called it, and try to be a little bit more creative so you don't have teams that are just dominated. And like, you will have a talented player who's just too young, you know, he's not big enough. That's a slightly different debate to what we're talking about here, to be fair. But it's just another strand of trying to make, and I suppose, the games program at that stage a little bit more all-inclusive rather than just the strongest will survive.
Cork are about to win, it seems, 119 to 117 up against Louth in round one of the All-Ireland round robin in senior football. Great looking Wembley at the moment for Coventry against Luton. I tell you this, folks, that Wembley Stadium is one of the best stadiums in the world. Like, you know, doesn't TV doesn't do it justice, I have to say, the new Wembley.
Your boy Luke McNally is there. I mean, like, Luke McNally is, I know I slagged Johnny Bickon on about
it. You just slagged Johnny anyway.
But like, he's an incredible story. Like, he again, at underage level here, was not on anyone's radar. Like, disappointed, like 14, 15, 16, no one was talking about him at all. And he had to go out to like the first division here to get some senior football at 18. Like, that's way later than a lot of, talking about kids coming on the radar at like 14, 15 now. Like, I mean, he is a really impressive story that he's got there. He's now playing on Wembley today in front of whatever 80,000 people to get to the Premier League. Like, fair play to him. It's one of the really, it's a poster boy success story for the later, like the talented kids who aren't in Hungary at the moment.
Gotta
17.
Give,
you know, like, they're good players, but they're not. Oh, yeah. They're not on the international radar at this stage. Don't. But a lot of the ones, as I said, like a lot of our Irish lads tend to blossom a little bit.
Can you imagine some of the under 17 players are not getting on that team? They're exceptional footballers. But like, I have to give Tim Clancy some kudos. He's been calling this McNally thing a long way out. I remember him saying to me one day, Drogheda were playing Shamrock Rovers in, I assume it was a cup game, and he said there was a foot race between Aaron Green, who would have been probably 30, 31 at the time, but Aaron Green is quick, and he said McNally roasted him, and he said, like, you don't see that from a centre back. He said he's unbelievably, then at the end of either that season, the next season, they threw him up front in games at the end of the season. He was banging in goals. And Tim, who's out of work at the moment, is at the game today, I think. He called it spot on Luke McNally.
I hate foot race, by the way. Cork 119, Louth 117.
Getting to know a lot of JD today.
So Cork have won by 2 points. We're going to use, just actually interesting, Danny Allen on YouTube. Me, that's become a serious area for new soccer talents. Luke McNally from Enfield, Jamie McGrath from Athboy, Darragh Lennon from Dunboyne, Evan Ferguson, Betty's 10, all from four corners of Meath.
Yeah.
Up the Royals.
Yeah. Well, Meath, until recently, didn't have a senior international at all. And I know, like, there is the Dubs who move into Meath, you know, and you have to, like, sometimes I've spoken to a couple of players whose family live in Meath, but they're very careful to say that they are still Dubs, you know. And I'm not sure, is Dawson Devoy, is he Meath or Dublin, but the family are Ashburn, and you have all this sort of
remember the county is a GAA concept there. Like, the county is like it's very much a GAA concept. That's why it's ingrained in our mind.
But Evan Ferguson is consistently referred to as a Dubliner in various places, and he's not, he's Betty's town. But then do you call him a Meath man? You know what I mean? Like, I'm not sure if he's like a, I'm not sure if he's
put on the green jersey at GAA matches.
Well, I don't think that's his thing, you know. And his dad's a Dub, you know. But they grew up in Betty's town.
Yeah,
I don't think he's like a Royal County fan with sort of, I don't know, Graham Garrity or Trevor Giles. Or, I mean, he's too old. He's too young anyway. But that's the thing. Nathan Collins as well, Kildare. We have a couple in Kildare as well who have just spread out of Dublin. What's their identity? There, that's a completely different topic.
Yeah.
But the Meath stat is definitely going to be blown out of the water now. By the Meath.
But they're like sons of Dubliners who live in the commuter belt, like, so they're not governed by what county they're from. It's almost irrelevant to them. Obviously putting words in their mouth.
Laytown is County Meath, isn't it?
Laytown is Meath,
But it's really more Louth almost.
Meath has the distinction.
Drogheda now is Drogheda, Meath, or Louth. Like, different people in Drogheda will tell you different things.
Meath has the distinction of having four race courses.
I've never been to Meath.
And
it's a joke.
Yeah, we're really running out of jokes here.
We're not.
Meath, what are the four race courses in Meath, Dan?
Bellystown, Navan, Ferry House, and
Laytown. And if you haven't been to Laytown, what is it? Every September,
one of the greatest things in life.
It's
you can
really,
do,
really
go to the races
to
on the beach. And
maybe Evan Ferguson will go. At that stage, he'll be signed up by Liverpool and
Johnny and Evan Ferguson pictured it.
Get government funding if he went up to race there.
Yeah, Eoin O'Riordan's tweet during the week was it was quite interesting. He was like, imagine if
you. Anyway, come on, you wanted to talk about the League of Ireland before we go off air.
Yeah, we've got a giddiness about you. Last night, like, we spoke about the game for different reasons at the start of the show, but this is basket case stuff. Shamrock Rovers, down to 8 men against Cork City, who've rallied now under Liam Buckley, having Colin Healy having left, down to 8 men. And then the grudge game, which has become less of a grudge game, I think, but still a grudge game. Stephen O'Donnell goes to Pats.
Oh, it's still a grudge game.
And Dan was at the game. And the last goal that Pats got, I saw a slow-mo of it today. Tommy Lonergan, the pass he played in to Young Carty. It was an amazing goal, actually. And I met Peter O'Connell, who you know from football. He's a publisher. I met him in Harrods Cross earlier. He was absolutely buzzing about this goal. Like, buzzing. I talked to a few Pats fans who love... just loved the night last night. The noise in the place, the roar for the goal. And funny enough, Dan, like, I remember texting you 3 weeks ago saying, is there even a title race now? And Rovers have now... What have they... They've dropped... They have just dropped down. Well,
Because there's a lot of different talking points. Like, Rovers have lost back to back against Drogheda and Cork. That's a fact. You know, Drogheda and Cork, who could end up in a race for 8th and 9th, and Derry go to play Sligo Rovers tonight. And if they win, they go 4 points clear. And this is Derry, who a couple of weeks back were dominated by Shamrock Rovers in Derry. So Derry can go 4 clear, and they have an opportunity now to open up a little bit of gap, potentially, or at the very least have the lead going in towards the break, when Shamrock Rovers have got games in Europe. And they're all in Europe, Rovers and Derry, but Shamrock Rovers have the big games. Like, those Champions League games are big bucks, you know, big money. And it can be quite distracting, as they found last year. So we do probably have a title race, but I wasn't Pat. It was brilliant. The atmosphere was great. The Bow Shells was on the box. It sounds like it was a bad game. And the Duffer Shells the last 2 weeks haven't been providing great entertainment, I think, for the TV audience. But Pat's was very, very good.
And all
the atmosphere, it was a controversial sending off. Yeah. There was still fans waiting around for Stephen O'Donnell at 11 o'clock when he eventually let the Dundalk players out of the dressing room. The grudge still lingers.
Life's too short for grudge.
It was good natured enough in the
All League of Ireland fans, you know, that are confident their team is going to stay up. They can look forward to going to Galway next season by the looks of it as well. And that is a massive boon, because Galway, you know,
can you just imagine how often he's going to mention that, JD?
Fair play to
Johnny Ward bingo, Evan Ferguson. And go away.
Fair play to Stephen Walsh, who's been with the club from like since he's about 17. He's now in his early 30s. He's scoring goals and was thrown up front. Delighted for him. And fair play to John Coughlin, Ollie Horgan, and everyone. It's been an amazing season so far.
Are Manchester going to do the treble, David Connolly, do you think?
Yeah, I think they will. I mean, you know, I think. Of all their opponents for the final. I mean, they might be tricky, Inter. You know, I'm sure they probably will be a tricky opponent, but I mean, I can't see Inter beating them. And yeah, I think they'll win a cup final too. So yeah, it wouldn't surprise me if they do the treble. So you'll probably then ask me, where do they rank amongst all the best teams?
Well, where do they rank in terms of comparably with it?
Well, like, as a boyhood Liverpool fan, there's like the Liverpool of the 80s that I would, you know, 84, whatever. You know, there's some teams that I would look at like that, a bit nearer, you might say.
Are they the best football team ever?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think it's way too early. Do you think it's too early to say that?
Well, like, just, I think it's too early. They haven't won a Champions League. They haven't won a Champions League yet.
Dismantling of Madrid.
They're not Pep's best team.
They have Haaland, though. I don't know about that.
Once they won a couple of Champions Leagues, you can make a comparison. But yeah. Barcelona under Pep.
It would be some fun if they lost Champions League final, though.
Well, yeah. Well, it's already it's an acclamation, but
let's be honest. It will be. No offense to the City fans out there. It's not that many of them in Ireland, really.
No.
It'd be bloody hilarious if they lost, wouldn't they? How could you not find that?
Well,
amazing?
I quite like.
What's wrong with you?
I do know a couple of old Man City fans, and quite like the main road pets. So I'd be sorry for them.
I know. I'd express fake sympathy if I met them.
Yeah.
But I can just imagine
even fake empathy.
Inter scored in the 5th minute, and just like City just banged the ball around for 85 minutes and didn't score.
That's what Jose Mourinho did.
And Haaland wasn't that great outside the box.
Yeah.
And he missed all the chances in the semi final, and they still won.
How did he not score? Like,
David, thanks so much, man.
Thanks, guys. Take care.
Under 17, as you said, quarterfinal against Spain, 7 o'clock. And Dan and Johnny, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Eddie.
for a great conversation on Football Saturday today. We've got to leave it there. Don't forget we're back tomorrow 1-7 here on Off the Ball News Talk. Joe Maloney in the chair. Final day of the Premier League season, we're going to showcase live and exclusive commentary of Everton versus Bournemouth, with Stephen Doyle and Brian Kerr doing the call as the Toffees bid to stay in the top flight. Also got reports and reaction from all the Championship games involving all the counties, especially Cork and Limerick, Dublin and Galway, and Dublin and Roscommon. We'll also bring the Sunday paper review with Shane Keegan and Keane Tracy. Be sure to tune in to Joe then tomorrow from 1. If you missed any of OTB Football Saturday with David Connolly, Dan McDonald and Johnny Ward, or our hurling preview with John Myler, Rory Jacob and Michael Verney, you can find the podcasts on the Off the Ball section of the Go Loud Network, or be sure to listen back wherever you get your pods. Thank you so much for listening on your radio across the country here on News Talk today. We will speak tomorrow with Joe at 1. Bye bye.
Off the Ball's cash machine.
This is your chance to win an incredible €60,000. After Liz's massive win on Thursday, someone missed the opportunity to continue the cash machine winning streak when they missed our call today. It means there's a big rollover for the weekend. If you've entered since 5 p.m. on Thursday, you're still in to win, but you must know the new number, which is €60,345.74. Text OTB and only OTB to 57557 to play. That's 57557. Get your entry in by 3 p.m. on Monday, and across the Go Loud network of stations, Barry Dunn will be making the all-important call. If your phone rings, answer it within 5 rings. Tell him that exact amount in euro and cent, and you will win the cash. So remember that amount again, €60,345.74. Over 18s only, text will cost €2.50 plus your standard message rate to play. You are playing across the Go Loud network of stations, and full terms and conditions are available on offtheball.com. And a reminder that if you're listening to this after 3 p.m. on Monday, May 29th, don't enter unless you know the current cash machine amount, as you will be charged and your entry will be invalid.